Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Double Elvis.
Blood on the Tracks is a production of iHeartRadio and Double Elvis. Brian Wilson was a musical genius and one of the greatest songwriters of all time. He caught melodies like they were waves. He bottled good vibrations like no one else. And he picked up bad vibrations, too. He broke down. He tripped hard. He didn't just hear music. He heard voices. He tried to lose those voices by making a teenage symphony to God called Smile. But somewhere along the way, Brian Wilson lost his mind instead. This is his story.
Okay, here we go again. It's Rhonda Mawson. Still working my way through this sea of Brian Wilson's home tapes. When I first started this task, I assumed there would only be a few tapes from Brian at home, but he recorded so much during that time. Like I said before, these can get a little bleak. At times, Brian doesn't make too much sense. There seems to be a lot of drugs consumed around the recording of some of these. There's one in particular I've been listening to recently, which seems to be a demo for the song Sail On, Sailor. Have a listen.
Hi, Van Dyke. I hope everyone at Warner Brothers likes this demo for Sail On, Sailor. Sorry it's so late. You know, this took me a while, and I know it's not finished. We can work on that when we meet up. You know, I haven't been feeling like myself recently. To be honest, I haven't been doing so great. I feel like the band is slipping away from me. I feel like I'm slipping away from myself. I used to be so confident in the studio, but those days are gone. I don't know if that will ever come back. I pray it does. Sorry, I'm rambling. Forgive me. I hope you like the demo. I hope it's good enough. I hope it's not just more blood on the tracks.
Chapter 7. Brian Wilson is sailing on.
Here's your tide report on BRIAN-FM. It's looking a little choppy out there. It's a little breezy in the air. The ocean is unsettled with reports of thunderstorms, but do sail on.
I'm back in here. I'm always in here. I've been in my head for years, here along with all those other voices. The most time I spent in here was in the early 1970s. My dad died in 73. He'd been in the hospital, and he seemed serious about changing his life and living healthy. I even thought he might change as a person. I thought perhaps our relationship would change. Perhaps we could repair what had been broken. He was terrible to me, but I was bad to him in return, you know?
You know, I haven't been feeling like myself recently.
I thought that time might bring us closer, but time, well, time has a habit of making fools of men. Soon after he left the hospital, he suffered a sudden, massive heart attack. June 4th. I'll always remember that day. My mom was with him at the time and managed to call an ambulance, but it was already too late.
It's so late.
I couldn't bear the funeral. Dennis stayed home, too. He played the piano, apparently. I went to New York with my wife, Marilyn, who was promoting an album she'd made with her group, Spring. We'd gone to a radio station in New York called WNEW-FM, and Pete Fomatale, one of their DJs who'd always been supportive of the Beach Boys, he was working there. Marilyn was being interviewed in the next room, so I went to see Pete in his studio. I've always loved radio. The excitement of it. It's always live, always going on and on. It reminds me of my brain. It never stops broadcasting. There's never any dead air.
Sorry, I'm rambling.
That day, I was a little out of sorts. The news of my dad had, I don't know. It was all that was on my mind. It was all that I could think about.
To be honest, I haven't been doing so great.
I walked into the studio and Pete ran up to me, with his headphones still around his neck, still plugged into the desk. That long cord snaking around the room. "What are you doing here, Brian?" he asked. My mind went blank. I didn't know who I really was for a second. It was like I was standing inside someone else. Like the person I was a stranger to me.
Like I'm slipping away from myself.
I honestly couldn't remember. I said something like, I'm here for the Ed Sullivan Show. He looked at me strangely. "Brian," he said, "that show has been canceled for 2 years. I laughed, but Pete just stood there. He looked so sad. I felt like I had vertigo. I honestly felt like in the space of minutes, I'd forgotten who I was or what I was doing there.
"Forgive me."
It was the strangest feeling. I burst out of the room and I threw up in the bathroom. I remember looking at myself in the mirror afterwards and, I don't know, the person standing in front of me looked so different from the person I was in my mind.
I haven't been feeling like myself.
As I stared at myself, I heard the radio station start to play a song I recognized. Slowly, I realized it was a Beach Boys song. A song called "Sail On, Sailor." Even though we'd only recorded it 6 months before, it felt like a decade or more had passed since we were in the studio with it.
I used to be so confident in the studio.
It was a song that got me back with Van Dyke Parks. I think everyone thought we'd conceive a new smile, but it didn't quite work like that. Van Dyke came over to my house and asked if we could write something together. The record company, which he now worked for, by the way, wanted me on the new Beach Boys album they were getting ready. I was lying in bed. with the TV just playing static. Van Dyke was next to me. "I want you to sit down at the piano and I want you to write a song for me," he said. "Lyrics, melody, everything. I want you to do it right on the spot."
This took me a while.
He smiled. I was kind of happy that someone wanted me to do something like that, but I couldn't sum up the motivation. "I'd do anything for you, man, but would you do something for me?" I asked him. "I'd do anything for you, Brian," he replied. I started to get very emotional. I could feel my throat close up and my eyes start to water. "You gotta convince me, Van Dyke," I said. "Convince me that I'm not insane. Please hypnotize me into thinking that I'm not insane."
"I haven't been feeling like myself recently."
I was being serious, but he didn't understand. He told me to cut the shit.
"Forgive me."
We wrote it, of course. We spent a couple days getting it right. Then I demoed the thing and it made it onto the album. As I listened to it while standing in the toilets at WNEW-FM, looking into the mirror, I struggled to process the song. Who wrote it? Who sang it?
I don't know.
Suddenly, Marilyn banged on the door and asked if I was okay. "Sure," I shouted back. I washed my hands and wiped my mouth. When I came out, Pete was standing with her. He pointed to the speaker that was still blasting out "Sail On Sailor" and said, "Good song.
Sail on sailor."
"I was just thinking that," I told him. "Who's it by?" He laughed, but I didn't get the joke. Sail on, sailor. They got me to do that for the money. It's always about the money. Capitol spent so much money on a new Beach Boys album called Holland, around $250,000. And that's a lot of money now, but back then, it was a fortune.
"I hope it's good enough."
The record company needed a return on their investment, so they wanted a hit single. Hit singles help sell albums, and that's why they sent Van Dyke over. They wanted me to rustle up a little "Good Vibrations" or "Fun, Fun, Fun." Like I had those sort of songs ready to go. Like a TV dinner. Ready in 3 minutes. "Sail on Sailor" it's not a song I care for. I mean, how can it be? It came not from a place of creativity, but from a place of business.
Those days are gone.
Recording the album wasn't much better. We were due to cut it in... that's right. In Holland. We went to a place called Bam Bruggy. I wasn't all that interested in recording. I thought I might be, but it was just like being in LA. I couldn't get into the right headspace for it. I was just lost.
Like the band is slipping away from me.
I used to just sit all day in this villa we rented, just sit and look at the countryside. I found it calming, but also sort of numbing. Just staring at this landscape which didn't change felt like it was protective. Like nothing happened. Therefore, nothing could hurt me. It was good for me, but it also made me not want to do anything. I was taking a lot of drugs there, too. I'd wake up and snort a line and just sit there as it fizzed in my nostrils. I repeated that hour after hour with different drugs. One day, I felt that I needed to snap out of it. Maybe I'll go to the studio, I thought.
Studio.
But I opted to drive around the countryside I'd spent days staring at. I took a huge bag of coke with me. I tucked it safely into the inside pocket of my jacket and patted it like it was my child.
I haven't been feeling like myself.
I jumped into the huge Mercedes I rented and sat in the driver's seat ready to go. But something was missing. A little bump, I thought. That was it. I pulled out the bag of coke from my jacket, racked up a line on the dash. Up it went. The fizzing was back. I started the engine and threw the car into gear, but wait, another little line might be in order. So that's what I did. Next thing I remember is cutting through the Dutch countryside. There were beautiful trees and flowers everywhere. It was hot, but not too hot. Not like LA. I pushed down on the accelerator hard. The car felt so powerful. It pounded the pavement. The steering wheel felt sturdy. I felt in control for the first time.
I used to be so confident.
I flicked the radio on and those familiar notes sang back at me. Be My Baby. I couldn't believe it. I was halfway around the world and this song was still there, soundtracking my every moment. I turned it up as loud as possible and sang along from start to finish. As the final note rang out and the DJ started talking, before I knew it, the voice had morphed from Dutch to English. Right then and there, I looked down at the radio. I couldn't understand what was going on. But then I heard it. The voice of Phil Spector.
Sail on, sailor. What the hell is that? Let me remind you. You never reach the highs of Be My Baby, and you never will.
I slammed on the car's brakes and skidded to the side of the road. I was trying to catch my breath.
I'm sleeping.
The DJ was back to speaking in Dutch, introducing some song I'd never heard before. I pulled out the bag of Coke, my hands trembling. I racked up another line, spilling a load of it all over the seats.
I'm sleeping awake.
I turned the radio off and slammed the car into gear. The Coke kicked in and I was feeling much better. Fuck you, I shouted to the voice of Phil Spector as I sang Be My Baby to myself again. I watched the speedometer go up and up as I got closer to the chorus, and then the dial shivered a little as the song launched into its hook. I felt so alive, so present, like I'd finally found the old me again.
Took me a while.
I licked my finger and then felt for the bag of Coke in my pocket. I stuck my finger inside and pulled out the tip covered in the powder. I rammed it into my gums. Be my baby, I shouted, throwing both of my hands into the air. As I did, I noticed a bend in the road up ahead. I grabbed the steering wheel, but it was too late.
So late.
I went off the road, kicking up dirt on the side of the car, and suddenly there were bushes, and a tree came out of nowhere. And the car went right into it. A tree branch smashed through the window and stabbed the passenger seat. I heard the dull thud of the bumper as it slammed into the trunk of the tree, and then it all went black. I'm dead, I thought. Fuck, I'm dead. No, I'm alive. But I must be injured, surely. I tried to move my legs and found I could. Then my arms, all fine. Then my neck, still fine. I pushed open the car door with all my might and stumbled out through the bushes into a field. I staggered forward, but then it hit me. The fear. The dread. I felt all around in my pocket for the Coke, but it wasn't there.
I don't know if that will ever come back.
I sprinted back to the car. My arm caught some broken glass. The smoke coming from the car was thick now. I felt around for the bag under the passenger seat. Man, I was crying.
Forgive me.
I was devastated. It wasn't anywhere.
Gone.
And then I found it. Wedged under the passenger seat, I rammed my hand under and grabbed it, my knuckles painfully grinding against the underside of the seat, but I didn't care. All that mattered was that bag. I pulled it out and managed to get out of the car again. When I was back in the field, I fell to my knees, hugging the bag as behind me the car burst into flames. Nothing mattered apart from me and this bag.
We'll be right back after this
word.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us. ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I still remember my daily routine from around that time. It's funny what sticks around in here, both good and bad. I remember a lot of late nights. I stayed up, but I did absolutely nothing.
It's not finished.
I couldn't tell you what I'd been up to. I just sat at home in LA, just kind of wasting away. My days would start around 11 a.m. Walk down the back staircase in my house and into the den. Sit in my bright red chair and pick at the upholstery with the TV on in front of me. I waited a while and then I heard the ring and the click of the mailbox outside. 12:14 every single day. Every single day. It was the service I paid for. It was expensive, but you pay for quality, you know, even when it comes to logistics. I requested a 12:15 drop-off every day, but they always came a minute early. I never knew why. Trying to please the customer, I guess. The person that used my mailbox every day? I never knew his name, but it was always the same guy. Not a postman, but a ringer. That's what they called them anyway. They delivered drugs, whatever you wanted, right to your door. Coke, amphetamines, even heroin. I had them all delivered. You could get them daily if you wanted, and I did. They called them ringers because they would travel on bikes. When the drop was done, they'd ring their bicycle bells as they cycled off. There was one day when I was sitting in my red chair, staring off into space, and my eyes darted to our clock on the wall. 12:13. I watched the second hand tick by. Tick. 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 I watched the second hand click jaggedly around the clock face, and then the minute hand brought us to 12:14, and me to my precious treasure. Tick. 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 Wait for it, I thought. Here comes the bell. Any second. But there was nothing.
I don't know if that will ever come back.
The clock seemed to get louder and louder in the absence of the ringer's bell. Just a little late, I thought, as I picked at the chair.
Sorry it's so late.
I bit my teeth together and ground them to a rhythm. I was flicking my foot quickly back and forth as I watched the second hand of the clock come back round again. Where the fuck was he?
I pray.
This had never happened before. The clock's minute hand swept to 12:15, and it sounded like a crash of thunder. I pulled myself out of the chair and made my way quickly to the front door. I was about to throw it open in anger, ready to unleash hell, but I stopped. I stood silently. Upstairs, I heard something. No one else was in the house apart from me. I was sure of that. I heard someone walking around, quietly, but they were definitely moving around. But then I heard voices. I froze.
I feel like I'm slipping away from myself.
I started to hear my heartbeat pounding in my ear. At first, I thought it was the ringer, taking a chance and grabbing some jewelry or something else valuable, but why would he do that? I was his best client. I walked quietly up the stairs, taking each one with minimal impact.
I pray.
The voices were hushed and aggressive. Higher I climbed with even more softness. Then I heard someone mutter, "I don't fucking know." I stopped at the top of the stairs and picked up an old walking cane. I lifted it up, outstretched across my body, ready to fight.
Pray it does.
I heard the voices again, a little clearer this time. They were coming from my bedroom. I walked there quickly while gripping the cane tightly. I stood outside the door, took a deep breath in, and then I kicked it open. I flew inside the cane, ready to strike, but I stopped. The face in there was one I knew. One I knew well. It was my wife, Marilyn. "Don't hurt me," she cried.
"Forgive me."
Now, obviously, I'd never hurt her, but it's probably quite a good thing to say when a renowned drug abuser is standing in front of you with a wooden cane held up high. She had told me she'd gone out, but clearly that was a lie. Marilyn and I, we'd always had an unconventional relationship, I guess. But recently we'd been having problems.
Those days are gone.
She had threatened to leave me if my drug taking continued. She threatened to take the kids as well. Brian, she said. There were tears in her eyes. We need to do this. To do this for you. She looked over at Stephen Love, who was part of the Beach Boys team at the time. He was halfway in our closet, pulling stuff out of it. Stephen was Mike's brother, and of course Mike was there too. He never missed a moment to embarrass me.
I used to be so confident.
He came storming out of the bathroom. Where are they, Brian? Stephen was asking me. I don't want to have to call the cops. Fuck, I thought. Well, this is a drug raid. A drug raid from my own fucking family. I explained that I didn't keep drugs in the house, which was sort of true. He was aggressive and angry, but I really couldn't help. Then Mike cut in. Look, Brian, you're getting a cut of our touring money, and you're getting a cut of our music money. You haven't properly toured with us in forever, and it's been, what, 2-3 years since you were fully involved in a musical project? I didn't answer.
I feel like I'm slipping away from myself.
Then Marilyn started in. Said they were going to put me in a mental institution if I didn't stop with the drugs. She was crying. I looked at her and felt nothing. I was numb to it all. To what Mike was saying. To what Marilyn was saying. To what Stephen was saying. It didn't really mean much to me. It was just all so boring. They swept the whole house, but I didn't care. There were no drugs anywhere. They were in my bloodstream, and that's about it.
I haven't been feeling like myself.
As they were going through the cupboards and knocking on drywall, I went outside, walked down the path in the morning California sun, and stood next to my mailbox. That's when I saw him, my ringer. He was sitting just down the street on his bike, looking right at the house. I waved him over. I didn't want to, he started, sounding confused. They told me not to drop if someone else could see me. I smiled and told him not to worry. I'll take them now, I said. He produced a brown envelope and handed it to me. I clutched it tightly to my chest. As I turned to go back to the house, I stopped. Say, I said, where are you heading? Downtown, he told me. Can I catch a ride? I asked. Sure, he replied. And before I knew it, we were off. I rang the bell as we left.
Brian Wilson is seated behind the mixing desk at RCA Studios in Hollywood. His beard is the longest it's ever been. His hair is shaggy and his eyes appear to droop down his face. The once slender frame of his youth is lost to a body that has been fed junk food and illegal substances for a decade. And the faders in front of him are all down, covered in cocaine residue. He takes a long, deep breath before pulling a large bag of coke from his pocket. He thinks of the ringer who dropped it off for him at his house just earlier that day. And he readies a line on the mixing desk, pushing it together with the side of his little finger, shaking as he does. He then pulls an already rolled note from his shirt pocket and hoovers it up quickly. Brian slumps back into the chair, itches his nostril, and presses the play button. The track Honeycomb fills the air. He listens to the lead vocal. It's not his voice, but his wife, Marilyn's. He stares at the speaker for a moment. He picks himself up from his chair, using his hands to gain the right amount of leverage to lift his massive frame. He shuffles over to a corner of the room where he spins off the top of a bottle of vodka. After a couple of shots, he suddenly becomes angry. He darts over to the mixing desk and pulls down the fader quickly. In the process, he drops the vodka bottle onto the expensive equipment. Fuck, he murmurs, as the liquid fizzles in the electronics. That'll cost you, comes a voice from behind him. Brian swings around. It's the guitarist, James Burton. His mind flashes back to making Smile, and there's Burton playing on a track, but he can't remember which track. He swallows hard, like he's trying to get the difficult memory of that aborted masterpiece down his throat. He thinks of the song Mrs. O'Leary's Cow, and hears a fire crackle in his ears. Brian, you okay? Burton asks, and suddenly Brian is back in the now. Brian lies and says he's fine. Then he asked Burton why he's here in the studio with him. "Well, I'm in the studio next door," Burton says, "with someone you might have heard of." "Jesus Christ, it's not Phil Spector, is it?" Burton shakes his head. "Nah, man, it's Elvis." Next thing Brian knows, he's walking down the corridor with James Burton to meet Elvis Presley. As they arrive at RCA's biggest room, Burton pauses. "There's a couple things you should know," he says, but Brian isn't listening. Somewhere between his anxiety and his excitement, he forgets his manners and bursts straight through the large door. There's Elvis, shiny multicolored shirt tucked into black pants, huge gold sunglasses swallowing his face. The king looks up, and for the first time in a long time, he looks a little perplexed. "Hi, I'm Brian," Brian shouts. Jerry Schilling, prominent member of the Memphis Mafia, grabs Brian as he moves towards Elvis. "Whoa," he says. "Who are you, boy?" Brian repeats his name and sticks his hand out to Elvis, but Schilling aggressively pulls him back. "I said, who the hell are you?" Schilling's strength is overpowering. Brian can tell immediately that this guy isn't fucking around. Brian timidly informs them both that he's a Beach Boy, and he's working on an album in the next studio. "Oh yeah, man, yeah, I know," Elvis says, removing his huge sunglasses and offering half a smile. Brian watches him as he speaks, studies his mouth, the way it draws the words, the way it moves a little slow. And then he looks up at Elvis's eyes and sees something in there he recognizes. He can't quite put his finger on it, and then he realizes they're dilated and tired. He sees it all, the foggy look on Elvis's face, the way everyone in the room is looking at him, waiting for something. There's an undercurrent of sadness, of disillusion even, to the way he moves, and the way he seems so big yet so vulnerable. Still in Schilling's grip, Brian asks Elvis if he would like to come and listen to the song he's mixing. The king cocks his head to one side. "I guess we could," he says. Brian can barely contain his joy. "You can let go of him, Jerry," Elvis says, putting his glasses back on. As Brian is freed from the grip of the handler, he feels an overwhelming sense of happiness. That and the cocaine pumping around in his body. And then he does it. He doesn't know why he does it, but he does. Self-sabotage. Brian looks at Elvis, and then at Schilling, and then back to Elvis. He smiles, points at Schilling, and says, "This guy thought I was gonna hurt you. I don't have a violent bone in my body." Brian raises his arm up, and swiftly and suddenly, karate chops the king of rock and roll, right there, in the middle of RCA Studios. The room is stunned, and for a few seconds there is only silence. And then Elvis looks over at Schilling and says, "Maybe we don't have time to listen to that track." As Brian makes his way back to his studio, alone, he thinks about what a mess Elvis looked like, how tired, how burnt out, and how ghostly he seemed. He laughs to himself as he reenacts his karate chop, shaking his head in disbelief. But once back inside the control booth of his studio, he promises himself he'll never get like that, a cliched rock star who's high all the time, who's lost touch with reality. He flicks play on Honeycomb, runs his hands through his long beard, and racks up another line of cocaine. The track rings around the room. To Brian Wilson, it sounds perfect, but to everyone else, it just sounds like blood on the tracks. Blood on the Tracks is produced by Double Elvis in partnership with iHeartRadio. It's hosted and executive produced by me, Jake Brennan. Also executive produced by Brady Sadler. Zeth Lundy is lead editor and producer. This episode was written by Ben Burrow. Mixing and sound design by Colin Fleming. Additional music and score elements by Ryan Spraker. This season features Chris Anzalone as the voice of Brian Wilson. Sources for this episode are available at doubleelvis.com on the Blood on the Tracks series page. Follow Double Elvis on Instagram at Double Elvis and on Twitch at Disgraceland Talks. And you can talk to me, per usual, on Instagram and Twitter at Disgraceland Pod. Rock and roll.
That's crazy. Oh, dang it.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.